And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 811, continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We head to Detroit to talk to the Detroit Tigers, a team that had a little playoff run last year. They have a Cy Young winner, multiple-time Cy Young winner up there. The youth movement is fully in gear right now in Detroit. To help me talk about this team, break them down, as usual, as he's joined me the last few years, you can find him over at Roto Baller. His first article dropped on Wednesday. He's on Twitter at Marty underscore Tallman. Marty Tallman, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks again for having me on. I love doing this each year. Looking back on the 2025 Tigers, man, we'll go through it. But yeah, other than it being absolutely freezing here in Detroit, as I was telling you before we hopped on, all is good here, man. So thanks a lot.
Yep, no doubt about it. Glad you could join me here and do this. Before we get going, let everybody know what you got going on at Roto Baller. Like I mentioned, the first article dropped, and you're joining I started there a long time ago, so it's a good joint.
yeah, thank you. Yeah, my first article dropped Wednesday, which is actually today. But top 12 prospects coming into 2026. So these are redraft prospects. So I went through all of them, did the top 12. I mean, I could have went probably 20 deep or something like that. But yeah, if you have an opportunity, go on my Twitter, please check it out. And if you have any questions, let me know.
Yeah, no, let them know. And looking forward to what's next for Mr. Tallman over there.
Yep.
Before we get into the players for the 2026 season, you kind of started to get after it. How was 2025? How do you, obviously they only one team wins the World Series, but sure. how do you think the season went? Cause they obviously took a big step forward.
Yeah. I mean, overall it was great. The roller coaster that was the season, where the first half of the season was beyond amazing. You know, we were first place in our division. We had multiple all-stars for the first time in probably, you know, 20 years, if not longer. Everything looked great, and then the second half was an absolute disaster. I don't know if you recall, but there was a time where I think we had a handful of wins in about 2 months, and the Guardians caught up to us, took over the division. We barely made it in, but in the playoffs, we tried our best with, and we'll get into the actual team itself, but Seattle took care of us, you know, at the end of the day. But looking at the team, I mean, it's a weird team. They're ranked 12th in OPS overall last year, but they were dead last in steals.
Yeah.
So moving forward, that's just how AJ Hinch does it. So I wouldn't expect too many steals from Tigers here moving forward. And they also had the fifth most strikeouts in baseball. So kind of like a middling offense, strikes out a lot. They don't steal, but they made it work. And then the team ERA, 16th overall, and then 14th in strikeouts. So the pitching staff's middling as well. And Comerica Park, the park factor is exactly 100. So it's like this weird mix of just like perfectly in the middle, but in the AL Central, that's good enough just to make it. But it, overall, it was a positive season for the Tigers, even though it was at some points very hard to watch.
Yeah, I kind of half forgot about that. They were running away with things, and then it turned into, oh no, what is happening right here? I remember that now. But and that series against the Mariners was awesome, because that was like awesome. Two teams just going after it, and that was the postseason was awesome all around. Like, it was some really good baseball each and every round. So it's almost like the Mariners advanced. They took the Jays, you know, the best the Jays could handle. It's almost like the Tigers probably would have done that too. Like, these teams are all pretty much going after it. It was good to see. So we'll see what 2026 brings.
Overall, the Seattle Mariners deserved it because they spend money.
Yeah.
They made moves. That's a theme. You know, that's a theme. They try to win, unlike our team. So,
well, if it makes you feel any better, and it probably doesn't, but you're the fifth and final team in the Central of my previews. And let's just say every person I've talked to has a similar thought about every team in the Central of just doing enough to try to be 500 and see where it goes type thing.
It makes you think, if the owners all get together, you know, in some offsite beautiful place where billionaires can hang out, and they're like, how about we all just don't spend that much money? Is that, you know, a gentleman's agreement? Everyone's like, all right, yeah, that's fine. We'll just make as much money as possible, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's kind of what it might feel like at times. That's for sure. Let's get into 2026 then. Let's kick things off with Riley Green, who I've talked about him on some recap shows, and to me, because I didn't obviously don't follow the Tigers religiously, it was like the quietest 36 home run season I could remember. He had 111 RBIs, hit 258. Absolutely amazing. 157 games played. Great stuff from Riley Green. ADP is close to 80 over the last 10 or so DCs. What are we thinking about Riley Green now? Is this the player he is, or was that just like an amazing out-of-nowhere type season?
The power is there. He's got a 17.1% barrel rate. Now, the problem is he also set the record for the most strikeouts ever by a Detroit Tiger in one single season. So he's this weird dichotomy of he's either going to hit you a home run or he's going to strike out. And when he's your third or fourth batter in the lineup and Torkelson's like that, Carpenter can be like that. It's tough to see that many strikeouts. But overall, I mean, he's the unquestioned all-star of the team. You know, 30.7% K rate, like I talked about, but he has a 7% walk rate, which isn't terrible. And he adjusted his swing. He had a career high 38.9% fly ball rate. So the goal is that for him to get a little bit closer back to what he was in 2023. In 2023, he had a 290 XBA, and he was striking out 27% of the time. So if he can kind of dial back the home runs, I'll take 30 home runs with a 270 average.
Yep.
Right? I don't know if we'll get there. So where he's going right now, it's around Jackson Merrill and Jaron Duran. Man, I don't have any of him yet. There will be a team where I do draft him, but where he's going right now, I just don't. That strikeout rate scares me, because you can find somebody that can hit you 30 home runs, you know, a little bit later with that many strikeouts and a 240 average. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you in the sense that like the power is just ridiculously undeniable. The swing and miss will always concern me. There's like no way around the swing and miss situation for me. As long as these guys that you mentioned, Torque and you mentioned Carpenter, like you talk about this, any other team, and you get above that 30% K rate, things get real murky real quick. And
yeah,
that's when I start to question things. That's why I've kind of stayed away from Green in the past. But at the same time, as we're playing a game where power is so difficult to come by, and now you got a guy that's got 30 plus home run upside, it's like, are we willing to take the chance, is what that comes down to. So I like him. I have no shares either, to your point. I have not gotten there, but I'm always concerned when I see a big swing and miss like that.
Yeah, the bad X projections have him for a 28.7% K rate next year. He's tied with Torkelson for 27 home runs. So, and they're the top home run hitters on the team. So if he could hit you 27 home runs and they got him for a 248 batting average, is that better than what Jackson Merrill can do? Probably, but I'm just not sure. I don't know. I think he's pretty safe for where he is. You know, I don't know if we'll see 35 home runs again, but I think close to 30 is what you should expect.
All right, so after the team's all-star, Riley Green, who you and I both like but also have our concerns with, we had to carry Carpenter, another guy that's got ridiculous power. We saw 26 home runs last year in 130 games at 252. At the same time, he's in a pretty hardcore platoon. Like, there's really no denying that when it comes to Carpenter. So where are you at on a guy like Kerry Carpenter, who his ADP is like 232, so it's not expensive, but that's baking in the platoon situation.
Yeah, and this is just overall with the platoon situation. That's the first thing people bring up with Carpenter, and it's true, you know. But at this point, nearly every single team are platooning their bats. So it's not like when you draft Kerry Carpenter, it's not like you're the only person who has a platoon bat. All 14 other people in your league, they have platoon bats as well. So as we get further in to this, I don't want to say trend, I think this is just how baseball is going to stay. Having the most at bats, which has always been important, you know, that's always been the golden rule, as many bats as possible. We're seeing in these new studies that less at bats necessarily isn't that bad of a thing, as long as you have the best platoon bat that you can have. And Kerry Carpenter is one of the best platoon bats. And for where he's going, if you can get 27 to 30 home runs, and, you know, an 80 RBI and, you know, 60, 70 runs, he's in a really good spot. And I think he's worth his current ADP. My biggest concern are the soft tissue injuries. 2 years ago, he swings so hard. This was in the playoffs. He hurt his core. You know, last year running around third base, he tore his hamstring. So even with missing a full month, he still got 464 plate appearances with being a strict platoon. So if he can stay somewhat healthy, he gets the 500 home runs. He can hit 30 or more. If he can get the 500 at bats, he could probably hit 30 home runs or more. But that's going to be the big thing, whether or not he's able to stay healthy throughout an entire season. That's my only concern. The platoon is not a problem. He has a 12.5% barrel rate, a 483 X slug. I wish he walked more, 3.9% walk rate. I believe that's the biggest thing holding him back for taking that next step in his career. But 30 home run upside in any type of league, he's worth drafting.
Yeah, no, I that makes sense to me. And I guess it's part of like the problem with like the current era of baseball. It's been talked about a lot. I've talked about it. I've talked about it. There's a ton of platooning now. That's just the reality of the game. So I guess it's pick your poison, because you know, certain people try to say, hey, I want to leave my draft in a five outfielder league without a platoon. And I'm like, that's pretty darn impossible. That's like in this era.
Not in a 15-team league.
Yeah, you're just not going to do it. So I guess then to your point, if you're going to have at least one, maybe two, depending on how you're going about it, this is probably one of the better ones to have when all things are said and done. With the power you mentioned, it's interesting with Kerry Carpenter, because you mentioned like the swing and miss with Riley Green. Well, you look at Kerry Carpenter, and the dude's only got a 22% K rate last year. And that's like, okay. So he's not like disastrous at this point. And that was an improvement over the previous couple of seasons. So, yeah, I'm with you. If you can build appropriately, the power is undeniable. I think there is a lot to like there. So I could see the Carpenter appeal in that regard. I don't have any shares, probably because my brain tells me not to. But I should probably
check. I don't either. That.
But yeah, it's tricky.
Not yet.
Now, it's the player I've always had like a soft spot for. I've really enjoyed him. And it also helps he's always cheap. His ADP is like almost 310 over the last 10 drafts. And that's the artist formerly known as Colt Keith, who has second base, third base eligibility. Dude's got some pretty serious power upside, I think. I don't know how far it'll actually get to. But I think there's, for me, I'm optimistic about Keith. You watch him a lot more than I do, so tell me if I'm wrong. But what are you thinking about Colt Keith this season?
I'm very optimistic, and I think the Detroit Tigers fans are really harsh on him. You know, I don't think, for all the fans who do watch, I don't think they're actually seeing what his underlying numbers are and what his potential could be. Overall, so he had 468 plate appearances last year with a 79.4% contact rate. He barrels the ball 9.2% of the time, and he has over a 10% walk rate. So you combine those three things and you extrapolate them over a full year. I mean, he could get you a 270 batting average, 15 to 20 home runs. And if he's playing every day, his sprint speed's in the 66th percentile. So he's not slow. It's just the Tigers don't run. So overall, that's a big trend here, is do not expect any of your Tigers to steal more than 10 to 15 bases, you know, and that's like our heavy hitter runners. But for where Colt Keith's going, I think he's the perfect middle infield, corner infielder in a 15 team league. He has the second and third base eligibility. He's really far down. When you're making that draft decision, you're looking at Ernie Clement, Brandon Donovan, Andres Jimenez, or Brooks Lee. I'd rather have Colt Keith out of those four. And it's not really necessarily close. Now, we'll get into this with McGonagall, but he doesn't necessarily have a defensive position. And that's the only problem I could see. The Tigers have kind of moved him around from second to first base last year when we weren't sure if Spencer Torkelson was going to stay up or not. Can he play third? He doesn't really have the arm to do so. So it's going to be kind of weird here, because the Tigers still don't have a shortstop. So that would be the only thing that I'm a little bit hesitant to saying he's going to for sure get 550 plate appearances. It's just he doesn't have a defensive position yet. So that's something to watch as spring training unfolds and kind of see where the lineups are going. But for his ADP, I think he's a smash. For sure.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. The price tag is amazing. I've always been very optimistic about him, but to your point, always moving him around is is interesting with him. Like, the dude's like 24 years old and we're playing yo-yo with him. I hate seeing that for any of these guys. And it's a blessing and a curse for the Tigers, because it means you have options, which is good, but it's like, he's the option that's getting moved around. That's where it kind of stings at times. So I love the price tag though. And the guys that are going around and that you talked about, I agree. Like, I like Brooksley a little bit, but if you want power, Colt Keith, definitely taking that one to task. If you want speed, you probably want Brooks Lee. There's your difference. So it depends on how you want to break that one down. But I do like Keith. I hope they can find a place for him. And honestly, I know we have a long ways to go for this, but I can't wait to hear your thoughts on McConnell towards the end of the show. Because, that's a polarizing topic. All right, let's go behind the dish. One of my favorite catcher twos, if I wait around drafting, is Dylan Dingler. And I'm overly optimistic, because I was pretty high on him last year, and I was really happy with the 13 homers, 278 and 126 games. He was one of their higher prospects when he got brought through. Jake Rogers gets hurt. He takes the job and runs with it. It's great to see in that regard. When you're talking about Dingler, ADP's 223. He's a new dad. Maybe he's got dad strength now. Who knows? But what are your thoughts on Dingler? Like I said, I like him as a catcher too, but you watch him every day and you might have a different thought.
What a breakout season for him. You know, the only thing I hold against him, he's from Ohio State. Outside of that, I absolutely love him. Great defensive catcher. I mean, he's one of the best defensive catchers in all of baseball right away. And that's something you don't typically see of a guy who's finally got his first full season in the majors. So he's going to play every day. He had a 293 XBA, which is absolutely insane for a catcher to be able to have that strong of contact and hitting the ball that hard. A 9.2% barrel rate, and he only strikes out 23.5% of the time. Bad X projects him for 11 home runs. I think that's a little light. I think he could get up to 15 home runs. And around him is Carter Jensen and JT Realmuto. As we know, Realmuto, he's coming down off his career high. As he's getting older here, he's on the downside of his career. And we don't – I like Carter Jensen, don't get me wrong, but his playing time is not in stone as much as Dingler is. So I think he's a steal for a catcher too in that with his ADP right there.
Yeah, I've been, like I said, when I previewed him, I have a lot of him as catcher too. I love me some Dingler time. Like, they – don't know if they made the shirts yet, but there's a lot of ways you can go with that last name in Detroit. So I'd imagine there's some things out there just off – even if it's on the streets, but – yeah, if he has another big season, there should be some cool stuff floating around Comerica Park. All right, let's go to the first baseman that came back last year. 31 home runs after a 10-home-run season, being demoted, all the good stuff. He had 31 home runs, obviously, in 2023. We're talking Spencer Torkelson. Hit 240 even last year. That's the best he's hit in his career. This is one of those, when we talked this time last year, Marty, it was just like, okay, maybe. Like, because this is when they signed Gleyber Torres. They're going to move Colt Keith to first. Where's Torque going to play? Then he has this spring training where it's like, okay, the team's always said we're not giving up on him. And then he started crushing, and he got the job done. Headed into 2026, Torque has an ADP of 205, let's just say, over the last 10 drafts. Are we still in on this? Or are you just like, okay, yeah, it was great to see, but let's not forget 2 years ago.
I think he's the right guy in the proper build. I think if you load it up on batting average and you've taken a decent amount of power, but you still need a little bit more for your corner infield position, I would look towards Torkelson. Right now he's going around Alex Burleson, Jonathan Aranda, and Wilson Contreras. Out of those three, he definitely has the most home run upside. Contreras, I don't think he's ever hit more than 25 home runs. Aranda, we don't know what he's going to do back in the trap. And Burleson, I don't know. I think the fact that he has outfield eligibility is the reason why he's still kind of in that range of Torkelson. But Torque has 11% walk rate, a 13.5% barrel rate. His contact is around 76%, which is pretty good. His main problem is he really struggles with pitches outside of the zone. If the ball is in the zone and he makes he goes for it, it's going to go pretty well, but he needs to get a better eye. So even with his 11% walk rate, he swings at a lot of pitches that are outside of the zone, and he does not make solid contact with them. Now, he will play every day unless he really, really does bad. There's no other first baseman really on this roster. So I think he's very safe. He's going to be batting fifth in the lineup. Dare I say he has 35 home run upside? I think he could get you 100 RBI. I think 80 runs is possible, but the average is probably going to be around 230, you know, somewhere between 230 to 240. So in the right build, I think he's definitely worth his ADP. Just don't expect the average to be too high. And I would back him up with a strong corner, another first baseman as well, just in case. But I think he's pretty safe.
Yeah, no, it seems like he should have the gig. I think the leash should be a lot longer after what they saw last year. But, yeah, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, it's definitely his.
Yeah,
it's definitely his. The only reason why it wouldn't be is if he somehow just, you know, just plummets and he doesn't do well at all. I mean, he's the number overall pick. Like, he needs to be there every day.
Agreed. All right, Gleyber Torres, he guys picked up a couple of years, or he signed last season as a free agent. He's coming back this year. We saw 16 homers and a 256 average. It's kind of who Gleyber has been the last couple of seasons. Nothing crazy, but this is like at ADP 240, probably not the end of the world. I'm not sure. Where are you at on Gleyber Torres?
I think he's great for where he's going. If he's your middle infielder, or and I've done this in a few DCs where I waited. Second base is interesting. It's either you get your guy, you know, the first three second basemans, or I just wait. And I wait, and I wait, and I wait. And if Gleyber Torres is your second baseman in a 15-team league, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think he's better as a middle infield option. But, I mean, last year he had a 113 WRC+. He has a great approach, you know, 13.5% walk rate, only strikes out 16.1% of the time. Decent pop. I think, you know, the home runs are going to land somewhere between 15 to 20 home runs. At X projects him for 17. So that's pretty much on what I think. Somewhere between 5 to 10 steals. And if you remember at the beginning of the year, he was on fire. Like, he was excellent. And then his second half, he fell right off. And that led right into the playoffs, where almost the whole team struggled in the playoffs offensively. And we just couldn't put our finger on why Gleyber was doing so bad. And then right after the season ended, it comes out that he underwent sports hernia surgery on his right side. So at some point during that second half, he was playing very injured, but he stuck with it and he kept going. So even with a few months of him just plummeting, he still had a 113 WRC+. So overall, he's going to play every day. He's at the top of the order. I think he's one of the safest picks as far as a middle infielder for a 15-team league. You know, he can get you to 15 to 20 home runs, around 5 steals, a 260 average. And he's going around Jorge Polanco and Luis Garcia Jr. Polanco has more home run upside. I'll definitely give you that. You know, he can get to the 20, maybe 30 home runs if all things go well in Queens. Luis Garcia, I like him, but there's a lot of question marks with playing time as well. I would just go Torres there, and I think it's going to be nice and safe for you. I don't think anyone's going to regret taking Torres at his ADP.
He's definitely fits the boring is beautiful mode. Like, you know what you're going to get. You can pencil it in. Definitely a 15 team deeper league type play. And there's a lot to be said about being able to just pencil that in. Winsteel Perez, a guy that we saw hit 13 home runs, steal 8 bags at 244. He had a couple weeks where it was just like, oh my God, look at Winsteel go. This is amazing. Then he had his other weeks where it's like, okay, he's a platoon outfielder. But again, he's going to be 26 this year. He's another young guy that who knows exactly who he is, I guess is the question. And when you look at Winsteel Perez, we're talking about an ADP of around 416 right now. Where do you sit on Perez this season?
I'm out on him. I just don't see it. A 102 max exit velocity, he's never going to be able to fully tap into power, especially in Comerica Park. I think he'll be good he's a good streamer, maybe a DFS guy. If you have like a daily leagues where you can do daily pickups, he might be worth it, like in a deeper league. But I mean, he's a switch hitter, but he can't hit righties. So it's this weird, you know, he has an 865 OPS versus lefties, 688 versus righties. 247 XBA overall, so he can hit you around 250, but he's not a great fielder. He's a slightly below average hitter. He only barrels the ball 8% of the time, which is around league average. That X projects him for 13 homers, 12 stolen bases with a .233 batting average across 500 plate appearances. So to your point, 26 years old, he could maybe develop more power. But if he's going to be on your team, he needs to be like your seventh outfielder in a DC. You know, I don't want to see him as, you know, in your top five outfielders. you've waited too long here. And I think he's most suitable also for fab leagues where if things aren't going the way they should, you can cut him.
Easy cut, perfect stream. It's about where it goes. They're a week they face a lot of righties. You could see maybe on the road, especially looking at a Wensiel Perez type. Let's talk about an all-star in Zach McKinstry. Pretty sure he was an all-star last year, if I remember correctly. McKinstry had 12 homers, stole 19 bags. He's one of the few Tigers that's actually stolen 16 or more bags in three straight years. Hit .259, plays all over the diamond. He's got third base, shortstop, outfield eligibility. ADP of .341 for now, penciled in at shortstop. Where are you at on Zach McKinstry?
I love him as a utility player, but Scott Harris and the Tigers, they're using him as an everyday player because they're too cheap to go out and really buy, buy a third baseman, shortstop, or a second baseman. So, he's a good utility player. He will probably start at the beginning of the year at shortstop. And this is where we get into Kevin McGonigal. And is McGonigal, you know, good enough to play short? We'll talk about it later. But as of right now, it looks like McKinstry is going to be the everyday shortstop. He played amazing last year. He played better than he ever did on the Dodgers, and he, you know, the actual Tigers fans love him, you know. But for fantasy, I mean, 10 home runs, maybe 15 stolen bases. That's on the high end. .233 average. Man, if he's like your backup, like middle infielder or corner infielder in a DC, I think that's perfectly fine. But I wouldn't expect him to. He shouldn't be able to get 600 plate appearances if the Tigers are serious about winning. And I say that as I'm smiling because I just don't know what this front office is going to do. But it really comes down to what they're going to do with McGonigal, and that's going to directly impact what they do with McKinstry as far as him playing every day.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I always thought he's the perfect super util guy, like third base, and obviously that cuts into Colt Keith. And there's just so many moving parts there of how that all plays out. And I never envisioned him as a full-time shortstop, but I also don't get paid by the Tigers, so we'll see how that works. But time will tell is the best way I'll say on that one. But in a DC, I could see the appeal of a McKinstry. It's tough because you're paying a pretty good price for him too at the same time. Parker Meadows, this is one of those where it's like, dude just can't stay healthy. Four homers, four steals at .215 last year. He came back from his injury, looked great till he got hurt like in the same game, and then really never got it going after that. Seems like this might be one of the last chances for him to figure things out. His ADP is a little after 400, so he's not going to cost you much. Do we have faith in Parker Meadows figuring it out is the question.
No, I can't say to your listeners that I have absolute faith because, I mean, he struggles so bad offensively. .229 XBA, 26% strikeout rate. Now, he does walk 10% of the time, so he has a pretty good eye. But the power just hasn't shown up. He's been hitting at the back end of the lineup. The only thing that will keep him in the lineup maybe longer than it should is the fact he's a really good defensive center fielder. Like he's potential gold glove out there. So I think he's fine if he's like your eighth or ninth outfielder in a DC. And his like we talked about, his legs won't be used well enough for stolen bases because the Tigers just don't simply run. So I think maybe a year or two ago, you'd see Parker and think, oh, well, maybe he can hit 15 home runs. He's really fast. Maybe he gets you 25 stolen bases. That's just not going to happen in this offense. And that's if everything goes right. So if he stays who he is, you're looking at probably 10 to 15 home runs, 10 to 15 stolen bases, a bad average. He's a full fade for me.
Yeah, no, I haven't drafted him yet. Every time I get around his ADP in the draft room, I look at it and go, man, what could have been someday and a nice move on to a different pick. But I do want to ask you about a bench bat that I've been, I guess, a sucker for drafting because he's third base, shortstop, outfield eligible, has an ADP of .473. And he played 126 games, and that's Javi Baez. Like, I understand he's not great. He's not the guy he once was. He's one of your elder statesmen on this team. But they seem to find ways to play him all the time last year. I know injuries helped with that, but is this a guy that you could see having a similar impact, like, so, like in a DC, there's something there, or is it just fool's gold at this point?
In a DC, I think he's fine because the Tigers find a way to use him in the best way that they can, whether that's center field, whether that's shortstop, or putting him at third base or second base. He kind of fills in wherever he's needed to. But the problem is, I mean, he walks 2.3% of the time. That's in the one percentile. Like, he it's does bad. Not. It's pretty brutal. Strikes out. He strikes out 25% of the time, which you would think is higher. It's still not good. But when you think of Javi Baez, you think of him swinging at a pitch on the outside, you know, or 3 feet out of the zone every time. XBA's 230. Sprint speed's in the 50th percentile at this point. He may be someone in a fab league that you pick up for a week or two just because if you had some injuries. But a 282 OBP last year, even with all of his success. I mean, he was an all-star last year, which is crazy to even think. So I root for him personally, just as, you know, if I put my fan hat on, you know, I enjoy watching him play. He's a lot of fun. But he's 33 years old. I remember when it was 2020, we were talking about how his skills and the way he plays, he was not going to age gracefully. And we have seen that the day he signed with the Tigers. Even though he had that first half that was good last year, we know what he is. He is a 220, 230 hitter. The power is pretty much gone at this point. The speed's not there. He's a full fade easily for me.
All right. Anybody else on the bench we need to discuss for fantasy, or do you want to head to the mound?
Yeah, a couple of people. So first, Jamai Jones. So in a very, very deep league, this is a very specific time where you would play Jamai Jones. So in a very deep league, and the Tigers are facing more lefties than righties, he would be a pretty good play. I mean, essentially, he took over for Andy Ibañez. He was demoted halfway through the year and eventually non-tendered. But Jones, 159 WRC plus and 150 plate appearances and 7 home runs versus all lefties. So he's a short side platoon. If they're playing a bunch of lefties, I think he's a good stream. He's good for DFS. He's good for like in a head-to-head league, a daily moves league. You just pick him up for a day or two. He's interesting because he really does crush left-handed hitting. And then the other guy would be Matt Vierling, which we just don't know what to expect, you know, but when he's healthy, he still produces. In 2024, he had a 107 WRC plus with 16 home runs and 6 stolen bases. He's a guy. Vierling is the guy to watch in spring training. I don't know what the plan for him is yet, but he could play at third base where the Tigers don't really have a third baseman. He can move in and out of the outfield when needed. And he can always hit. If he stays healthy, you know, he can hit you 15 to 20 home runs with a decent average. So I'm not saying go out there and get Vierling on every one of your teams, but he was someone that I would be watching during spring training to see how his playing time shakes out.
All righty. Let's head to the mound. Not a whole lot needs to be said about this man, but you can wax poetically as much as you possibly want. Another Cy Young Award for Tarek Skubal, who is just an absolute beast on the mound. He's got an ADP of 6 right now. He's going as high as 4 over the last 10 drafts. He's your SP1 in fantasy right now, according to ADP. That's a whole other discussion for other people, but I think he's the SP1. Where are you at on Skubal, who's been great, and even with all the trade rumors, seems like he wants to get extended in Detroit?
Yeah, this is what I put was he's the best pitcher in baseball for the second year in a row. Yep. And that's where I'm at. Yeah, he's worth the 6th pick. He's worth the top pick. Will the Tigers re-sign him? Probably not. I will go on record saying I don't think there's any chance that the Tigers re-sign him. But I also don't think we're going to move him. So I think he's going to be a Tiger throughout the entire year. He is the best pitcher in baseball. He's worth a draft pick at where he's going.
Yep, he's awesome. There's, like I said, there's not a whole lot. He's must-see TV is the way I see it.
I try to make it to every one of the starts. I live actually in the city of Detroit. I hop in my car. I'm there. I'm at Comerica Park in 8 minutes. Beautiful. If he's on the mound and if I can, I'm definitely going. I try not to miss a start. He's worth it. That place, yeah. Comerica Park is buzzing every time he starts. And he's so much fun to watch. You could tell he loves to compete. You know, he's just a super batting, hitting his glove, throwing as hard as he can at the last pitch of the game. He's just he's everything you want as a baseball fan to be on your team. And I truly do hope we re-sign him, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yep. I hope they do for Detroit's sake as well, but time will tell. Let's talk about Captain Jack Flaherty, who last season we saw 161 innings again. Ratios were a little wonky, but underlying metrics said he should have been better. He had the strikeouts. He also had the walks to go with it. It was a roller coaster of emotions for Jack Flaherty, as I had to defend him often in the Bubba and the Bloom Discord this past year. And I understood the gripes, but I still think he's a decent pitcher, especially with an ADP of around 220. So like that still keeps me somewhat interested. Where are you at on Jack Flaherty?
Well, first, I do want to shout out the Discord. The Bubba and Bloom Discord is awesome. I myself am a paying member to be in it, and there's baseball being talked every single day. Really smart guys in there. Everyone's bouncing each other's, you know, going through ADPs and drafts and gladiators and what they're doing, this and that. It's a lot of fun. So for your listeners that were maybe on the fence about trying it, it's definitely worth it. But with Flaherty, I was actually talking to my buddy Lucas Beery. You know, shout out to him. He's also, I think, in the Discord as well.
He's in there as well. Yep.
Yeah, I was on the clock, right? So I was looking for my SP5. I'm on the clock, 15 team DC, and I'm looking at him and Matthew Boyd, right? So I'm like Flaherty or Boyd. And in my mind, I'm thinking Flaherty. I text Lucas, "What are you thinking?" He's like, "Definitely Flaherty." So I pulled the trigger on him. And I've completely come around. I am Flaherty for where he's going. And if you build your pitching staff correctly, he's worth it. Yep. You know, he's got a 367 CRA, an 18.9% K minus walk ratio. He has three pitches mainly. You know, he's throwing his four seam, his knuckle curve, and a slider. His knuckle curve has a 42.3% whiff rate and a 24.2% put away rate and a 180 XBA. It's the fastball that gives him troubles. He gave up 13 home runs with his fastball last year. So it's going to be important for him to be able to pinpoint that more and keep it out from the heart of the plate. Comerica Park does help with that. But when you're looking at his projections, he's projected for 160 innings pitched with a 3.90 ERA, 160 strikeouts, a 120 whip. If he's your SP4 or hopefully your SP5, I think you're in a good spot. And then he's going around like Boyd, as I said, Zach Gallen, Roki Sasaki, and Merrill Kelly. I would go out of those players when I'm on the clock. I go Flaherty. What about you?
No, I'm Team Flaherty. Like I don't mind Merrill Kelly just because he's kind of an innings eating machine, and I don't mind Gallen because maybe he figures it out again. But I prefer Flaherty over all of them because, like 2 years ago, it was great. Last year, he just had some unlucky moments for sure, had some rough starts. And I think there's still a lot to like with Flaherty. And as you said, if he's your SP5, he has the ability to pitch like an SP3, which I think is very good on a fantasy team. So I like Jack Flaherty. I will continue to wave the flag for Captain Jack, and hopefully things go that way. Casey Mize, this is a pitcher that my co-host Ryan has slowly kept talking into my head to like get more interested in. Finished with a 3.87 ERA over 149 innings pitched, 16.4% K to walk. This is once a former top pitching prospect. ADP's 260, so he's going like over 20 picks after Captain Jack. And I found myself grabbing a lot of Casey Mize, and I'm starting to worry that I have too much Casey Mize. So be totally brutally honest, is this a good or a bad thing?
I will say this. I sat in this chair last year when you asked me about Casey Mize, and I told you I wasn't sure if he was a big league starter. Yep. So in 2023, he had a 5.40 ERA. 2024, 4.49 ERA. Last year, he took a huge step forward. He posted a career-high 22.2% strikeout rate with a 5.7 walk rate. And the changes that he made with his arsenal – he stuck with them throughout the year, and it actually turned his entire career around. So he decreased his fastball and slider usage, and instead he increased his split finger and his slurve usage. So with those tweaks, Bubba, I would not be too worried that you have too much of him. I think where he's going, I think he's very steady. And now that being said, he's never going to be dominant. You know, he gives up a lot of hard contact. His ground ball rate decreased from 49% in 2024 to 38.7 in 2025. But he has above average control with below average stuff. So he's more of a, he needs to be able to pinpoint him, pinpoint his pitches, but I think he's going to be good for a 390 ERA, roughly around 160 innings, maybe 150. He's never had the ability to go longer than that. So I he'll never be a workhorse. In other words, I think innings will always be a little bit of a question mark for him, but I think 160 would be about right with about 150 strikeouts. He's 28 years old, so he's entering the prime of his career. He still is the former overall number one pick of the draft. By the way, he went number one in 2018. Logan Gilbert went 13th. And outside of Logan Gilbert, if anyone's bored, go take a look at that first round of the 2018 draft. It has to be one of the worst first round drafts of all time. It's so funny looking at it just because I was doing that a couple days ago. It's brutal. It shows how hard baseball is, and even the best scouts and analytics, you know, everyone's just guessing. But at his current ADP, Casey Mize, he's good to go. I like him this year a lot.
Good. I'm glad we're on the same page there, because like I'll take that stat line you gave right now and just be happy as can be. If it's even close to that, I'd be pretty pumped. All right, Reese Olson. This is a name that a lot of people like, and for good reasons. When he's healthy, he's looked really, really good in his entire career, but health has always been an issue with Reese Olson. And you kind of mentioned with Casey Mize, like how many innings you think he can get here. He won't get you a ton of innings. Well, Reese Olson is also like, what are we going to get from him? His ADP is close to 300, so he's not costing you a lot. But at the same time, like, are we getting 10 starts? Are we getting 20 starts? Like, what are we getting out of Reese Olson? It's a big question that really no one knows what to answer, like, because you don't know. But again, when he's healthy, really darn good. So where do you look at what are you looking for with Reese Olson this year?
I am worried about his shoulder. Last year, right shoulder strain ended the season in July. He started mound work on December 12th, so he's making progress. But even with all of that, you look at his stats. So below average stuff, below average control. You can't project him for more than 120 innings. You just can't do it. So for a specific build, because it would actually, yeah, let me see. Yeah, 119 innings back in 2022. So that's the most he's ever thrown, 119 innings since he's been in professional ball. So you have to have a very specific build of a handful of starting pitchers that you can't be, you're concerned about every one of your pitchers staying healthy, but Reese Olson is more than likely not going to be able to pitch more than 100 innings. And when he does, he's just a little bit better than average. So I'm off on him. He's going around like Grayson Rodriguez, Mike Burrows, Cody Ponce, Garrett Cole, Jameson Taillon. I'd rather have Jameson Taillon this year than him. I really would. I think what do you think?
No, about I was going to say that. I say that's fair. Like that's what scares me with Reese Olson. Like he's a great ratio guy, but what do we get? Like Taillon, again, he had his health scares last year too, but the dude's just going to throw 5-6 innings every time out there. He rarely crushes you. Let's put it that way. Rarely crushes you. I love Mike Burrows personally. That's like a big target of mine in drafts. I don't have Reese Olson anywhere. I just know like it's a buzzy name that people are excited about because we have seen good stuff. It's just all these small samples.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if you have 10 teams, maybe draft him on one of them. But when Grace Rodriguez is sitting there at the same part of the draft, I'd rather just go with Rodriguez if we're just taking a guess who's going to stay healthy. I'd rather go with the guy who has upside.
Yeah, that's fair. I have no Grayson either, but I see your point. I will say that much for sure.
Me neither.
Drew Anderson. This is, again, one of those, like, I just pass him by in the rooms. Maybe I'm wrong here. He's coming back from the KBO, so I don't really rarely know what to do with these guys. Great strikeout stuff in the KBO. Great ratios in the KBO. It's going to be 32. So, again, we have a lot of questions to be had with that. But it's an ADP of 631, and he might have a spot in this rotation. So, where are you at on Drew Anderson?
He's a fine dart throw. I mean, yeah, no one can sit there and tell you what to expect from him. I mean, last year in the KBO, he posted a 12-7 record with a 2.25 ERA, 245 strikeouts, which is great. But I mean, anytime he has a 650 career ERA in 19 games combined with the Phillies, the White Sox, and the Rangers. So anytime he's actually seen major league hitting, he's been absolutely terrible. But who knows? Maybe he could be one of those reclamation projects that comes back and he's great. But at the end of the day, the Tigers still only gave him a $7 million contract with a club option for $10 million in 2027. So even the Tigers themselves aren't even sure he's going to be able to last. So true. I think he's an easy fade. If you do want to take him on one of your teams, I think that's fine. But with these guys coming over, I wait a year. You know, that's just, I guess I'm just more conservative in that way, or however you want to put it. But I'd rather just wait and see how it goes. Now, Scott Federer and the Tigers development team's pretty good. And obviously they saw something where they think they could maybe be able to change Anderson. But at this point, it would just be a guess. You'd be guessing that he would be the SP, like the fifth starter in the rotation. So I don't know if it's worth it.
No, I've moved on. I don't take a lot of the KBO first timers when they come over. But if he's got a spot in the rotation, I get it in a DC, to say the least. I'm going to ask about one other pitcher. He might have been in your prospect portion of this, but I'm just going to get it over with. Troy Milton, a very popular name out there. Paul Spohr at FPAS talked about that as a sleeper shocker. He picked a Tiger to discuss. But Milton, we saw some really good stuff, obviously, this last go-around with him whenever he got a chance. And right now you have to draft him with an ADP of 282. What are your thoughts on Milton this season?
So looking at his numbers last year, so fastball velocity is through the roof. The guy throws the ball extremely hard, 361 xERA, but he still only struck out batters 20% of the time, and he had an 8.3% walk rate. So that's like, I'm not the best mathematician, but a K-minus walk rate is around 12, which doesn't really stand out to me too much. Now he's 25 years old. He's out of San Diego State. So he has the ability, obviously, to improve a lot, but this would be another one of those guys that you're just kind of hoping will take that next step. But we don't even have a true outline of what his role is going to be. He's exciting. I could see in a shallow league maybe making him your last pitcher and then cutting him if it doesn't work out. But if you're in the position where, because what did you say his ADP was?
282. So he's up there.
He's up there. So at that point, like, you got to be, I'm making sure at that ADP that I know this guy is going to get the ball 25 times, you know, throughout the year, 30 starts, you know, hopefully 20 to 30 starts. And I just don't know that about him. But he's exciting. I think if you have him on one of your teams, I think that's probably be a good bet, but I wouldn't, I'm not putting a lot of faith in him yet.
Fair enough. Let's head to the bullpen where, my goodness, we have some fun here. Like, Will Vest has usually been pretty good when he gets the chance. They brought Kyle Finnegan back. He was good before he got hurt and after they traded for him. And then they went and signed Kenley Jansen, who's always good. He's not as dominant as he once was, but he continues to just get you 25-plus saves. And, you know, the ratios get a little higher, but he finishes the job is what I'm going with. And of course, AJ Hinch said, "Well, I don't have a set closer." Kenley says the right thing and says, "I'm cool helping wherever," which I don't believe one second of that whole process. So Kenley Jansen's ADP is 105. So if you believe he's the number one closer, that's one of the later number one closers you can draft. So that's not bad. If you are a believer in the other two now, Finnegan at 378, Vest at 370. So how are you approaching this bullpen? Because I still think it's Kenley's world. He wouldn't have signed there without it. But we've seen Hinch get wonky.
Yeah, I think your read on it is correct. Jansen, he's 24 saves away from 500. There's no way he would sign with a team that's not going to give him that opportunity. He's definitely going to get as many opportunities as possible. Now, the reason why I think I'm trying to think like mentally, like, why would Hinch say that? It's because Vest never hasn't lost the job. Like, he never lost the job, right? He had a 26.4% strikeout rate. He has a 106 stuff plus, a 108 location plus, a 112 pitching plus, and a 298 Sierra. So how can you look Will Vest in the face as a man and say, "You're being demoted"? You know, you're just going to be another arm out of the bullpen. So, like, I can understand, because Hinch is all about respect and he respects his veterans. So I think that's more of just a baseball move saying, oh, we don't know, you know, we're not going to automatically give it to Jansen. But at the end of the day, Jansen's the closer coming out of the bullpen until he's not. There's no way it's going to be bottom of the ninth and they're going to put in Finnegan or Vest if Jansen hasn't pitched the night before. So I would expect Will Vest to piggyback off days where Jansen did pitch. But I mean, looking at his stats last year, still 114 stuff plus, a 98 location plus, and a 109 pitching plus for Kenley. Now he had a 190 fit BABIP and he had 85% left on base percentage and a career low 24.4% strikeout rate. So he got lucky. His K rate's down. But when you're in a DC, because this is DC season, you need the guy who you think is going to get, who's going to get the opportunity, who has that role. Jansen has the role until he doesn't.
No, good to hear from you as someone that watches him, because I fully agree. That was my whole thing. And Ryan and I said it forever, like before all the closers started signing like crazy, it was always like, okay, Jansen's one I'm going to spec on. We've done this every year with him because he's only signing where he can close or he's retiring. Like he's not signing up to be the seventh inning guy in Detroit of all places. If he's signing to be, it's like the Dodgers or something where he gets a ring. He's not doing it in Detroit. No offense to the Tigers, but like, that's just not where it's happening.
None taken.
And it's just like, so I'm with you. I was just glad to hear that coming from someone else besides me just being hopeful for my fantasy team. And then you said it also, like I've been saying it every year, is he as dominant as he once was? No. Like the strikeout rate's slowly going down. The ratios are slowly going up, but he's still super serviceable. Like it's very, very serviceable. And in DC season where it's going crazy, he can be your RP1. You don't want him to, but at ADP 105, he can also be your RP2, and you could lock in a real good stranglehold on that position if you really want to. So love it. Love it a lot.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, Will Vest is going to have 10 saves. Finnegan's probably going to have 5 saves. So I think Vest is still worth drafting in a DC. Because there are going to be nights where Jansen pitched the night before and they're not going to do a back-to-back with him. And if he does struggle, if his strikeout rate continues to go down and his luck numbers like BABIP and left on base percentage, you know, normalize, it's possible he doesn't last the entire year as a starter, but it is absolutely his job until it's not for Kenley.
Beautiful. All right, what prospects were we looking at here? I heard there's this one really good shortstop, but I don't know if he's going to start the year with him or not.
Yeah, I mean, which one? Who do you want to start with?
Let's get McConnell out of the way here. Let's just get him out there, because it every day in the Discord or somewhere, it's like, what are they doing? And it's like, well, if you listen to the team, and again, who knows what the team's truths are? They said they're not bringing him up anytime soon. So it's like, what are we doing here? So what are your thoughts on this whole situation? Because the thing is like you said, it's DC season, so you can stash guys. That's fine. But you're paying a 290 ADP, so it's an expensive stash.
It is. And, yeah, Scott Harris has already said, and the words he used is, we are focusing on development more than rushing him up right away to start for the team this year. And that is something that the Tigers' overall philosophy, and this goes for any of their prospects moving forward, is that you should never expect them to hurry up and rush someone. You know, their whole goal is to keep them down as long as they can, manipulate, you know, arbitration money and all, you know, all that different type of stuff that you hear that you don't want to. Now, with all that said, McGonigal, he's considered the best pure hitter in the minors. I mean, across three levels last year, he slashed .305, .408, .583 with 19 home runs, 10 stolen bases, and he had a 182 WRC plus, and he walks more than he strikes out. So he did everything he can. You know, there's no reason to keep him in the minors at this point. Now, defensively, scouts are split on whether he will be a major league shortstop or not. You look at his defensive run saved as a shortstop, he's -2 last year. Put that in perspective with Connor Griffin, the number one overall prospect, he was +7. So is McGonigal a good enough shortstop to dethrone McKinstry? I think so. I don't think, you know, McKinstry is going to be the reason why McGonigal doesn't move up. It's going to be more of the games that the Tigers play with manipulating surface time and everything like that. Now, for what it's worth, in the AFL, as we, you know, it was great to see you out there in Arizona and see McGonagall hit a home run. That was really cool. And he won MVP of the AFL, McGonagall did. So that was really cool. But what I, the biggest takeaway I got was that he played third base more than any other position. So that's potentially foreshadowing what the Tigers are going to want from him in 2026. So he could potentially be their third baseman. He could be their shortstop, and he could be their second baseman. Now, luckily for him, the Tigers are thin at all three spots. So I don't think he's going to have a problem finding a home, you know, once he is called up. But like I said, the front office has already said that they're focused on development rather than bringing him up right away. So it's possible that he's not fantasy relevant until the middle of the summer. You know, I think he'll be maybe one of those. And this is outside of any type of injury, right? If Keith gets injured, McKinstry gets injured, or, you know, everything changes. But if everyone stays healthy, I think he's more of a late May, early June call up. And once he is called up, I think he'll be a strong middle infielder in a 12-team league. I don't think he's going to come up and, you know, hit the cover off the ball. He's not Connor Griffin, you know, but he's going to be very good moving forward. But for this year, I'm not going out of my way to draft him. I love him and he's great. But for fantasy, I don't see that big of an upside, especially it's possibly doesn't come up till August. Who knows what they're going to do? I think it's May or June, but he's a pure hitter, but he doesn't have tons of pop. This time next year, I think he'll be definitely worth the pick. But right now I'm just curbing my enthusiasm a little bit just because I could see the Tigers holding off on him longer than they should.
Yeah, where my brain's at, like, I'm kind of believing them, and I'm like, they're going to keep him in just long enough to still be rookie eligible next year to get a chance to get a draft pick out of him. That's what I see them doing. They're probably looking at the rest of what's going on, and it's like, okay, we got these like kind of utility guys that we can make work for now. That's just where my brain is watching from the outside, and then hearing them say it, I'm like, yeah, I think they want to wait until next season to try to win like a rookie of the year or something and get some draft picks out of it. That's my thought.
Yeah, that's the unique position of baseball. I feel like it's the only sport where like the teams aren't trying to win. They're always trying to hold their players down. It's a shame we got into this, Bob.
It's a shame that we love something like this.
Yeah, love a sport that like treats us so poorly. But he's great. It's going to be a lot of fun. Spring training, tune in. You know, if he forces their hand, he's going to play. But we'll see.
What other guys should we potentially expect this year? I know some of them might be a little farther off. Maybe they're not. Like, you got Briseño, who like was two fall leagues ago, was just an absolute monster. Like Max Anderson is a big name. You got Clark down there. There's guys coming. I just don't know who's coming this year so much.
Yeah, I think well, let's start with Max Anderson. So last year he hit 341 with a 1.0 OPS against lefties between double and triple A. I don't think there's a player that took a bit of leap more than Max Anderson, especially from the AFL and everything like that. And he's turned into one of the third best hitting prospect, I believe, on the team. Now, and this is coming from the Tigers beat writer, Evan Petzold. He said he is viewed more likely to develop into an everyday player more than most players. So what I take from that is when he is called up, he's going to be an everyday player each day on the 40-man roster. Now, I think he's definitely going to be, if he is called up this year, we're talking late August, you know, September, you know, that last month where they call up the players at the end. And we can hop into Max Clark as well. By far the best athlete in the Tiger system. Max Clark is a beast. He's a lot of fun to follow on Instagram and Twitter as well.
He's always showcasing something on there.
He's cool, man. He's like a white Javi Baez. You know what I mean? Like he's just got that swag. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's going to be great when he is called up. But I truly believe Anderson and Clark need a little bit longer to cook down there in the minor. So I don't have a problem with them not being called up right away. I could see Clark even coming up 2027, you know, maybe breaking the team at camp or coming in halfway through the year. So dynasty leagues, hold tight. Redraft leagues, I don't see a reason to have Max Clark to draft him this current year. And pretty much same thing with Max Anderson. They may get a month in the majors if everything folds the best way. McGonagall's the only one where I believe they're going to be calling him up, you know, earlier than the last wave of the summer.
All right, so it sounds like some fab targets potentially, but that is about it with Detroit when it comes to the prospects. All right, we went through the rosters. My question for you now is, what are your expectations for 2026?
What do I think of a team that hasn't invested money in the team, really? They're middling at offense. They're middling with pitching. They're in the AL Central, which I guess is to their advantage. I really don't truly know what to expect of this team. Are there, because we got to think about if they're not going to go out and spend money, then there has to be development inside of the team. But this team strikes out the fifth most out of any team in all of baseball. So they kept overall their main hitting coach, but they did hire two lower level hitting coaches, like the assistant hitting coach. They got a new one of those. So we got them from Baltimore. I don't know if that's they haven't done the best job of getting the most out of all of their elite talent either on the hitting side. But anyway, yeah, the long story short, I think they'll be a little bit better than 500, which gives them the opportunity to barely make the playoffs. And then once they're in, if they still have Scooble, you know, I think they can make a little bit of a run. I mean, they were one good inning away, you know, to facing Toronto for the pennant. So it's hard to root for this team because they don't put the money into them. When the old Ilitch, you know, Mike Ilitch ran the team and not Chris Ilitch. Mike Ilitch spent money like it was going out of style.
You had Maglio, you had Miggy, you had everyone coming around there.
Man, I mean, even like Gary Sheffield, like it didn't matter. If a free agent was available, he was spending the money to do so. That is not the climate that we live in. So we just have to hope that the inner development of the team has improved, that the guys that they do call up, like McGonagall, hopefully they hit the ground running. All of that would give them a little bit better of a chance. But conservatively, I say barely over 500 potential chance to make the wild card.
All right. Well, you're saying there's a chance. That's all that matters.
Saying there's a chance.
Before we wrap this thing up, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on, my friend.
Yeah, you can find me on X, Marty_Tallman, writing for Rotoballer. Right now I'm doing the player previews for a lot of these Tigers as well, gearing up for the Rotoballer player preview coming up. I'm doing the news every single night too, pretty much. So that's been a lot of fun, you know, staying on the news desk. But yeah, you can find me at Rotoballer. I just, like I said, came out with my first article there. Goes over 12 top hitting prospects, Kevin McGonagall being one of them. So feel free to dive in there and just appreciate you know, letting me come on again. It was awesome to see you in Arizona. It's great to see you. See you here in the cold winter here in Detroit, Michigan. But I'm excited. I'm in a DC right now. I think I'm actually on the clock, but I love fantasy baseball, man. This is great. Thanks for having me.
You are the man. I always appreciate chatting with you. Always enjoy meeting up with you. And we'll have to chat a little more this season as I'm trying to do more Bench with Bubba's than I've done in the past. So we'll get you back on here. Hopefully.
Yeah, I heard. I listened to the New Year's resolution show two a week, man.
Trying to get back to it. So, if that actually happens, like I hope it will, you will definitely be back on before next year's Tigers preview. I'll tell you that much. So,
all right,
everybody, check out Marty. Check out his work. Great dude. Always appreciate chatting with you. And for now, everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 811, your 2026 Detroit Tigers preview. Catch you all next time.